The bud stands for all things, even for those things that don't flower, for everything flowers from within of self-blessing, though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely, until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. Good morning, my dear friends. Those words may sound vaguely familiar to some of you. They come from a beautiful poem by Galway Kinnell, and I used them to begin a sermon when I was here just 6 weeks into our journey. Now it's been 6 months, and 6 months later, and the end of this sermon series, where we've been using Brené Brown's wonderful book, Braving the Wilderness, The Quest to Stand for True Belonging and the Courage to Stand Alone. And I hear these words from this poem as a gentle and perhaps needed reminder. Brown suggests that we have become hypercritical. We've become polarized, isolated, hunkered down, and have built our own bunkers of preferences and opinions, and in the process have lost the memory of what it means to be fundamentally and inextricably connected to each other. We have focused on her four elements or daily practices, pointing us to the discovery or perhaps remembering the ancient wisdom of true belonging and what she calls braving the wilderness. We have set these practices each week next to our scripture readings and then our lives. And with each sermon, we have gathered, after each sermon, we have gathered for very generative conversation. I pray that what we have begun here continues long after Lent. This is the stuff that builds up the community gathered. And I think as members of a beloved community, we are then sent out into the world to take what we have learned here, to practice it in our lives day to day. So this morning I want to recognize that this is also hard work and emotionally exhausting at times. So today I offer these beautiful words as we start and then turn to the last of Brown's four spiritual practices for true belonging. For while this work is intentionally hard, it is not set apart from our loveliness, our deep, deep belovedness. So hear this, dear ones. You are, I am, we are indeed lovely. And I'm so very honored that together we're walking this path in which we're discovering what it means to be both broken and blessed, all at the same time. These words also pair so well with Brown's final spiritual practice for today. Strong back, soft front, wild heart. The first part of this practice, strong back, soft front, comes to Brown from Dr. Joan Halifax, Buddhist teacher, Zen priest, anthropologist, activist, and author. Halifax writes this: all too often, our so-called strength comes actually from fear, not love. Instead of having a strong back, many of us have a defended front shielding a weak spine. In other words, we walk around brittle and defensive, trying to conceal our lack of confidence. If we strengthen our backs, metaphorically speaking, and develop a spine that's flexible but sturdy, then we can risk having a front that's soft and open. And then we can give and accept care with strong back conviction and soft front compassion, moving past fear into a place of genuine tenderness and letting the world truly see into us. This Buddhist teaching offers us a wonderful image as we discover true belonging in our daily lives. A strong back giving us courage, and a soft front to risk being vulnerable as we are, Brown writes, We will then abandon the certainty and safety of our ideological bunkers and head off together into the wilderness. So where does this last piece of the teaching, Wild Heart, come from? Brown explains true belonging requires more than just the first two pieces alone. The third component, Wild Heart, is the reminder while we may choose to leave the wilderness, once we have mastered some of these practices, the wild will have marked and changed our hearts forever. Having a wild heart means we stay committed to and mindful of the choices we make every day going forward. I've also wondered this week if this might also be a new and wonderful moniker explaining what it means to be a follower of Christ today. After all, I would like to suggest that we are members of Jesus's Wild Heart crew. You see, at our baptism, we make five promises. Through those promises, we spell out our response to God's invitation to live as followers and servants and disciples. We make these promises recognizing our total dependency on God, saying at the end of each, "I will, with God's help." Remember today what you promised, or maybe if you were baptized as a baby, someone made promises on your behalf. Here is my only slightly colloquialized version of those five promises. First, to learn and grow in the context of a faith community. Second, to offer and receive forgiveness whenever we forget to be or see God's love in the world. Third, to speak out and act as if God's love really matters. Fourth, to get out of our own comfort zones and discover God's love in unexpected people and places. And finally, to be about justice and peace, respecting the dignity of absolutely every single human being on the face of this beautiful planet we call home. Pretty big promises indeed. Enough to change the course of a lifetime, I think. And if we were making those promises on our own, with the illusion that self-sufficiency and determinism were all that was required, I dare say they would be futile, if not impossible, promises to make. And yet, we make these promises in the context of a faith community. We hear the promise of a community to help us and support us each step of the way when we walk the way of Jesus. We cannot walk this wild heart path without a crew of crazy, like Jesus loving minded people. We need each other to laugh and to cry, to point out our blind spots and to believe in this journey when sometimes day by day we ourselves forget. We are part of a story that offers glimpses into our inextricable connection to each other and to a source of life and love more powerful than anyone has ever been able to contain or completely and accurately describe. So we turn to our meta-narrative each week, the stories offered in Scripture as one way, not exclusively, but an important way, of making sense of what it means to be a part of this Jesus's Wild Heart crew. Today we hear a passage from the 12th chapter of the Gospel of John. It contains most of what Jesus had to say about his own death in that gospel. It takes place in Jerusalem during Passover, the last week of Jesus's life. According to John, some tourists, Greeks they were called, were in town for the festival, and they asked for an audience with Jesus. And it seems that this request for an audience with Jesus was the thing that triggered Jesus' realization that his hour had come. These were not local people who had heard about him from their neighbors or people who had followed him over the past 3 years of his ministry. These were Gentiles from across the sea who wanted to meet this infamous Jesus, Jewish holy man. When the authorities heard about it, they would step up their efforts to arrest him. The more famous he became, the more dangerous he was to them. Something had to be done about him, and soon. "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified," Jesus told them, and not only them, but the whole crowd that was standing around. "Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit," he said. And there it is. There is our connection with our spiritual practice today. Strong back, soft front, wild heart. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Many scholars believe this is a statement about the redemptive power of suffering, both Jesus's and ours. I also hear it in the context of our desire to brave the wilderness with strong backs, soft fronts, and wild hearts. Jesus calls us to die to self and all that is self-serving and fear-based in order to bear fruit that nurtures and transforms and shapes us and the world. Daryl asked us last week what we might be willing to let die in our lives in order to be born again in this way. He reminded us the wilderness invites us to change, not change to make ourselves more comfortable, but change ourselves to make others feel more loved. He also then went from what we say preaching to meddling, as they say, when he went one step further, saying that this change is going to cost us something. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. In this statement, I also hear the invitation to resist, as Brown describes, our inclination to armor up, to protect our lives as they are. Because when we do, in an attempt to prevent change, prevent conflict, and prevent pain, in the end, we will also block out all that is good and holy and life-giving in the process. And if we face into our lives with a strong back and a soft front and a wild heart, staying humble and true to ourselves, wholly dependent on God, then, as Scripture reminds us, there will indeed be no end to the abundance of the fruit in our lives. And once we have relinquished our need to remain a single grain, the possibilities, my friends, are endless. This is our work. This is our journey. This is our invitation. May it be so.